Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, welcome to Luke's English Podcast. Welcome to another episode. How are you? I hope that you're in good form wherever you are and whatever you're doing. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. On Luke's English Podcast, I like to do all kinds of things as a way of helping you to improve your English. Sometimes I will teach you things, grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation. Sometimes I'll just give you some interesting stuff to listen to, and that's what I'd like to achieve in this episode, okay? So this episode features a few humorous accounts of people's experiences on aeroplanes. Now, why have I chosen this topic? Well, why not, okay? There's no Christmas or New Year connection or anything like that. It's just an episode that I've been thinking about for ages, and finally I've got around to doing it, okay? Actually, the main reason is just so that I can play you some stand-up comedy, which hopefully you will both learn from and enjoy, okay? I always want to play you stand-up comedy because I think it's brilliant, and I want to share it with you. The subject of flying, which is what this episode is dealing with, is something that's pretty universal. I mean, we all fly on planes. Well, most of us do. We all have experiences of flying on planes. So I thought there was a pretty good chance that you'd be able to relate to people's comedy routines on that subject. Comedians all seem to have material based on flying. It's a very common topic for stand-up comedy. I think precisely because it's universal, but also because it's quite a bizarre experience, isn't it, in some ways. When you think about it, getting into a huge metal plane, and it's huge and it's made of metal. It doesn't... Logic would seem to... Well, our stupid logic would tell us that... there's always that question in the back of your mind when you get into an aeroplane, which is like, really, this thing is going to fly through the air? It's still, even though we've been flying for quite a long time now as humans, there's still something pretty extraordinary about it, I think. And it can be a little bit frightening. So it's something that I think we all, share, isn't it, as a species, just the bizarre experience of flying. So we're going to listen to some stand-up comedians talking about their flying experience. Please do be aware right now at the outset that there is some rude language in this episode, okay? You will hear some swearing and, you know, rude words and things like that, okay? It's very normal in stand-up comedy. Comedians often use colourful and sometimes offensive language in their routines. That's just the nature of stand-up comedy. Okay, so let's listen to some stories of people flying. Stories which hopefully you will find funny and amusing. That's the idea. Also, right now at the beginning, I should say that if you go to teacherluke.co.uk and find the page on the website for this episode, you will find loads and loads of stuff that will help you understand this particular episode of the podcast. So you'll find scripts of every comedy routine that we're going to listen to. You'll find my notes as well. And lots of the things I'm saying are transcribed there, so you'll be able to read them. This could be a really great resource for you as learners of English. Just go to the website, check out all the text there. It's going to help you a lot. Alternatively, you don't have to check out the website. You can just listen, just sit back, relax, and just try and understand what's being said. But if you want to take it a little step further and actually look at the words that are being used, maybe compare what you heard to what is written to check that you've understood everything properly, then you can, of course, go to teacherluke.co.uk and check it all out there. Okay, so Let's listen to some stories of people flying. Almost all of the stories that you're going to hear in this episode are comedy routines by stand-up comedians. One of the things you're going to hear is just an inspirational story, which does have some laughs in it. They're all about people's experiences of flying on aeroplanes. Now, before I play you anything, there are three things that I wonder. Okay, three things that I'm thinking about. First thing is that I wonder if you will get all of the details of the stories that I'm going to play you. I wonder if you're going to notice, be able to hear all of the details. And I also, the second thing is I wonder if you will find them funny. Now, when I listen to these, especially the comedy routines that you're going to hear, when I listen to them, I find them very amusing and enjoyable. And there's humour in there and comedy. I wonder if you are able to notice, not only notice, but also enjoy the comedy which is being presented to you. Usually, comedy, jokes, humour, that kind of thing, that's one of the hardest things to appreciate in a second language, okay? I want to try and push your English, and so I like to present you with stand-up comedy because not only does it present you with some authentic listening resource, an authentic listening resource, it also has that extra sort of goal, the extra reward, which is that if you understand it properly, then you get a kind of a little joke, you get a laugh at the end of it as a reward. So I wonder if you're going to find them funny, okay? And thirdly, I wonder if you know all of the vocabulary that you're going to hear. And remember, you can just check out the scripts for these routines on teacherluke.co.uk as a way of helping you to pick up any of the vocab that you perhaps didn't understand, okay? So to understand the subtleties of these recordings, I will give you a quick summary of each story before you listen. So then you'll know the main events, you'll know the main ideas which are being communicated, and that will hopefully leave you to just focus on the funny details. So listen to my account first, my simple summary, and then you can listen to the comedy version and see what the differences are. To deal with the humour, I will actually explain what I find funny about each sketch after we listen. Now, obviously, humour is totally subjective. It really depends on the person, and there is no universal form of humour. What one person finds funny, another person doesn't find funny. However, I also find that humour is one of the last things, as I said, it's one of the last things that you can pick up when you're learning a language. In my experience, learners of English tend not to find the same things funny as native speakers, perhaps because they don't get the cultural reference points or because you can't really understand it well enough to get all the jokes immediately. Instant comprehension of all the subtle shifts in tone and meaning is very important for finding something funny. Most of the funny aspects of these routines, for me, they're not obvious jokes. It's far more subtle than that. It's to do with the particular attitude of the comedian, the approach they take to dealing with the subject. So it could be quite challenging for you to actually pick up on the humorous aspects. Maybe not. Maybe you'll get it all and you'll find it very funny. Anyway, let's see if you can pick up on those subtle things and find the humour and just enjoy it. Basically, if you're enjoying the story or enjoying the routine, then good. You're doing well. Now, I will give you my assessment of what I think is funny after each bit, okay? Now, I know that you shouldn't really explain jokes or explain humour because it kills the humour, but I'm going to do it anyway because I want to help you to understand why someone might find that funny. Because who knows, you might listen to these things and think, that wasn't funny at all. I didn't get any of that. That just seemed to be annoying. But if I give you my commentary, then maybe you'll get a bit more insight into why I find it funny. Okay, now I've played comedy in my English classes to students for many, many years. And You know me, I'm a huge fan of comedy and I think it's great and I value it very highly. And so naturally in my English classes every now and then I would play my students some comedy. And usually I personally would be disappointed by the result. I mean, I would notice that my students didn't really find the things funny, and understandably just because their English wasn't quite at the right level maybe. That was one thing. But on the other hand, the other thing that disappointed me was the fact that the students didn't seem to value what was being presented to them. They didn't actually seem to want to try to find it funny. Maybe that's just how it felt, you know, that it sort of hurt me a little bit because I personally was very passionate about the things I was playing them. But I just got the sense that they didn't even see how it was valuable or useful, and that they almost like comedy doesn't have a very high value in many cultures. In the culture of the English language, stand-up comedy is very, very highly valued. And some of our favourite people, some of the most famous people that we have, in fact, some of the most celebrated like people on television, in radio and stuff like that, are stand-up comedians. And we love the art of stand-up. I'm not sure about the rest of the world. In fact, I get the sense that stand-up is sort of seen as not such a high form of art or expression. Anyway, I will give you some comments about what I found funny, and we'll see. We'll see if you notice those things too, and we'll just see what happens. As ever, I'm interested in your comments, so go to teacherluke.co.uk and leave your comments under each episode. As a kind of experiment in listening comprehension, I want you to tell me what you thought of the clips, okay? Did you find them funny? Which one was your favourite? And so on. I'll also give you one of those like a questionnaire poll thing where you can just click on which one you thought was funny, or click one of the options that I give you. Okay, so there is also vocabulary, which I don't think will be such a problem, but we'll see. I may explain some items of vocabulary that appear. Otherwise, you can just check out the transcripts and Google them and study them yourselves. Okay. And if that is not enough already, I've already mentioned this. There are scripts of every stand-up routine that you hear in this episode, and you can check them out on the webpage and use them to understand every single word if that is what you fancy doing. So let's go. In no particular order, I haven't chosen these bits in any particular order, really. You will hear four routines or four stories. And we're going to hear from three of the most celebrated stand-up comedians in the world. And also another story of a real event that actually happened, okay? So we're going to hear four things. The first thing will be Louis C.K., talking about the time that he thought he would die, and that's from one of his live stand-up concerts. Then we're going to hear Eddie Izzard talking about eating biscuits on a plane. And thirdly, we will hear from Jerry Seinfeld just talking about observations at the airport. And the fourth thing we'll hear is a guy called Rick Elias talking about three things he learned when his plane crashed. And that's a real account of a plane crash. Okay, so we will start with Louis C.K.'s story. I've talked about Louis C.K. on the podcast before. Most of you should know who he is, really. If you're not sure who Louis C.K. is, he's an American stand-up. He's generally, I think, considered to be, you know, the top stand-up in the world. Maybe Seinfeld is it's Louis C.K. and Jerry Seinfeld are considered to be probably the best stand-up comedians in America at the moment. I think more people know Jerry Seinfeld because of the TV show, but Louis C.K. is the sort of he's like the critic's choice. If you're an expert or a specialist in stand-up, then Louis C.K. is the one that everyone really celebrates. So Louis C.K.'s story. Let me give you the summary first. In not a particularly funny way, but just the basics of the story. So here we go. Here's the summary of Louis C.K.'s story, which is entitled "The Time I Thought I Would Die." And so Louis talks about a time when he was scared for his life, and he thought he was going to die. And it's a true story. He was flying from Indianapolis to New York, and there was a delay because of a technical problem with the plane. The fuel gauge was broken. The fuel gauge is the thing that shows you how much fuel there is. You have one in your car. They also have one in airplanes. So they were sitting on the runway for some time, and there was a delay because the fuel gauge was broken. They didn't know how much fuel they had. But the pilot decided to fly, even though he didn't know how much fuel was in the plane. Which is a bit of a risk, isn't it? So Louis just assumed that the pilot knew what he was doing. He just unquestionably put his trust in the pilot. Which is quite an interesting thing. Why do we do this? Why do we just put all of our trust in the hands of one person? So Louis does express some concern about the rather relaxed approach to safety which the pilot is taking, just choosing to fly even though they don't have any fuel, even though they don't know how much fuel is in the plane. He chooses to fly anyway, and Louis does express some concern about this. The plane is still delayed though because of bad weather at their destination in New York. The pilot informs the passengers that he's going to lie to the tower. You know, there's a tower at every airport which is full of air traffic controllers who are responsible for managing which planes can land and where they land and so on. They all sit in a tower. So the pilot informs the passengers that his plan is that he's going to lie to the tower in New York, telling them that they're going to Philadelphia, even though they're actually going to go to New York. The plan is to say that they're going to Philadelphia, and at the last minute, ask for permission to land in New York. So New York has said, no, you can't land here. There's bad weather. So the pilot's going to say, well, we're flying to Philadelphia, and then at the last minute, oh well, can we land in New York? And then the tower will be sort of forced to agree, because according to the pilot, he thinks the weather is not so bad. Now, in my version, the one I'm just giving you now, obviously this isn't funny at all. But in the way that Louis explains it, Louis, of course, is a professional stand-up comedian of like 25 years experience. He does it in a funnier way. So again, Louis expresses concern about the attitude of the pilot and wonders why the pilot is sharing this information with him. Why is the pilot telling him this ridiculous plan? Louis and the other passengers basically accept the situation, though, because perhaps stupidly they do have just, you know, weird faith in the pilot and in the whole situation. So despite the fact that this sounds like it's going to be a nightmare, all of the passengers are going, yeah, okay, fine. The weather during the flight is terrible, and there was a big storm, which caused the plane to shake around and stuff, which must have been very frightening. He managed to somehow listen to the conversation between the plane and the tower in New York. In planes, they have little radios, and sometimes you can tune into the frequency that allows you to listen to the plane talking to the tower. So Louis managed to listen to this conversation. And in fact, the tower didn't allow the plane to land in New York because of the bad weather. So they could have run out of fuel and fallen out of the sky at the moment, because the pilot couldn't fly to Philadelphia because he didn't have enough fuel. Suddenly, the tower in New York announced that the airport was closed due to bad weather. And at that point, the pilot panicked and requested urgent permission to land, because obviously he realized that he didn't have enough fuel. Then there's a conversation between the guy in the tower and the pilot, and the tower guy allowed him to land, but he was quite annoyed. The pilot immediately went in for landing in a very dramatic way, and it was an extremely stressful and dangerous landing in low visibility. And Louis talks about how that felt as a passenger. The pilot and all the passengers, after the plane landed, they were all extremely emotional at the end. And then even the taxi drivers at the airport were surprised by the dramatic landing of the plane. Okay, so that's my summary. Again, not a funny summary by any means, but nevertheless, it should give you an idea of basically what Louis C.K. is talking about. But let's now listen to Louis C.K. When I Thought I Was Going to Die, which is from an album which you can purchase. It's called Word, live at Carnegie Hall. And I really, really do strongly recommend that you buy that album. It's a whole stand-up concert. It's something like an hour or so, an hour of him doing stand-up. And he tells lots of stories, and it's one of the best stand-up recordings that you can get. And if you want to buy it, you can. It's very easy. I think it costs about $5, which is not very much for such a good piece of work. You can just go to louisck.net, louisck.net, and there you can buy Live at Carnegie Hall. And this is just one part of that. So please do go and buy his concert. And you can also buy his other videos and things directly from his website there. Very reasonable prices. So here we are now going to listen to Louis C.K. When I Thought I Was Going to Die, from the album Word, live at Carnegie Hall.
I'll tell you this story about one time that I thought I was going to die. I think it's the only time where I thought, why wouldn't this be when I die? I was on a plane. I've been on a lot of planes and a lot of shitty weather and stuff, but this shit was fucked up. I was in Indianapolis on a plane waiting to take off, and we're sitting there, and the pilot comes on, and he says, hi, folks, the fuel gauge is broken, so we're waiting for maintenance. So we wait about 20 minutes. Then he comes back on,
folks, the fuel gauge is still broken, but we're going to go anyway. We know how much fuel we have, and we feel confident it'll be okay, so we're going to go.
And I'm thinking, okay, well, he's a pilot. I'm sure he's going by some manual that says, you know, if the fuel gauge breaks, call maintenance. If they're not there in 20 minutes, fuck it. Fuel gauges are overrated. Just go. You're fine. Just top it off and remember what happened. So then we still don't take off. And a guy comes back on.
Folks, we have another problem. LaGuardia Airport in New York won't give us clearance to take off because the weather's been bad there intermittently. So we're going to wait for that.
So we wait 20 minutes. Then he comes back on.
Folks, LaGuardia still hasn't given us clearance. But we're going to go anyway.
We're looking at the radar. We think the weather will be fine. So what we're going to do is say that our destination is Philadelphia. We'll get clearance to go there. Halfway to Philadelphia, we'll switch course to the LaGuardia Airport. We'll be halfway there in a few minutes.
I swear to God he said this. First of all, I'm pretty sure you're supposed to be honest with the dude in the tower. Like, does the dude in the tower have to go, really, you're going to, come on, tell me where you're going? And why is he telling us this shit? Am I going to have to corroborate this lie if we get pulled over by the sky police at some point in the flight? Oh, no, we're totally going to Philly. I got a brother there, and we got a thing in Philly. But I'm still fine with it because we're travelers on the plane. Yeah, I got a thing. Fuck it. I'm immortal. Just go, please. Yes. Go into marginal weather with shoddy equipment. Secretly, I totally support this plan. So, we take off. We get above where we are right now. And it's just a black motherfucker of a cloud. It's just like the Wizard of Oz. It's just, there's trees throwing apples at us. It's crazy. It's just horrible. And we're the whole flight, and we're making these circles. And me and the guy next to me are both listening to the tower. You know how you can plug into your seat sometimes? And you can listen to the tower talk to the area airplanes. And we keep hearing our guy trying to get clearance to land from LaGuardia.
This is Delta 288 requesting clearance to land. That's a negative 288. Low visibility.
A few minutes go by.
This is Delta 288. We would really like clearance to land. Yeah, that's a negative 288.
Like he was getting annoyed. And meanwhile, we're just circling and burning this vague amount of fuel. We could just stop being an airplane at any second. And then we hear this. This is all true. The LaGuardia guy comes,
it's LaGuardia Airport to all area airplanes. We are closed for the night. Zero visibility. Not safe for landing. Please divert to Philadelphia or Allentown, Pennsylvania or Boston.
And then we hear our guy,
this is Delta 28. We need to land now. We have no fuel. We have to land right now.
Wow. Interesting. Then there's a pause, and then we hear this.
Well, then clear to land, then 280. That's how he said it. Like, dude, no one can see, okay? But just, I guess all the dumb decisions you made today have made this a good one. Just take a shot. I'm going home. Just fucking turn the lights off after you crash. I don't give a shit, frankly. By the way, you're not supposed to be here, you fucking liar. You said you were going to Philly.
So as soon as we get clearance, we just... like we start bulleting. We're either flying desperately towards the ground or falling. I don't know that there's a difference. We come out of the clouds and there's the fucking Earth right fucking there. It's right there. That's what low visibility means. We come out of the clouds and, no, fuck, it's right there, Jesus! And the plane just... And you can feel the plane go, oh, fuck, I can't do that. What are you, nuts? And we go and veer over the highway. And I swear to God, I saw people in their cars go, what the fuck? And we hit the runway like sideways, like. And the pilot comes back on, all true, I swear to God. He's totally out of breath. He's like.
Welcome to LaGuardia Airport, New York City. You may turn on your cell phones now, and you may call your loved ones.
He said that. He said, you may call your loved ones. And everybody on the plane was crying and rocking back and forth, just sobbing. Calling their husbands and their wives. I'm divorced. What am I going to... Hi, remember you hate me? Well, I almost died. I got in a cab, and the cab driver goes, that was a very bad landing. I was like, how'd you know that was me? He's like, that's the only plane to land in 4 hours. We all watched the drivers. We said they're going to die.
Okay, that was Louis C.K. talking about when he thought he was going to die. I wonder what you thought of that. Now, what do I think is funny about this? Well, as I've said already, it's always a bit of a bad idea to try and explain humour, because it usually kills all the comedy, but what the hell? Let's do it anyway. So firstly, there aren't really any jokes in this bit. No kind of classic standard structured jokes. It's just the way that Louis tells the story, adding some descriptions and some sarcasm, some attitude and drama. That's it, really. The first big laugh comes from the line, fuck it. As if, you know, the line where he says, you know, the pilot's manual, where he says, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's a pilot. I'm sure he's going by some manual that says, you know, if the fuel gauge breaks, call maintenance. If they're not in 20 minutes, if they're not there in 20 minutes, fuck it. Fuel gauges are overrated. Just go. You're fine. Just top it off and remember what happened. So that's really where the first laugh comes from. As if a manual for a pilot on a plane would actually say, if the fuel gauge doesn't work, fuck it. Just go. Of course, a manual wouldn't write that. Instead, this indicates the negligent attitude of the pilot who is flouting the safety regulations. And this is what is going through the pilot's head. And it's clearly a huge act of negligence. There's something funny also about copying the voice of a pilot, especially when he's acting rather irresponsibly. We all hear those pilots' announcements. You know, this is the guy that we're all trusting our lives to. He usually sounds quite relaxed, the pilot. And pilots do have a certain kind of voice, thankfully. You know, it's usually that...
welcome aboard flight. You know, welcome aboard flight LEP-102. This is your pilot speaking. We're about to take off. We've just been given clearance for takeoff, so... you'd like to make sure that your seat back is in the upright position and your tray tables have been stowed away.
You know, that sort of thing. It's always very kind of calm, confident, smooth. You can imagine all pilots look like George Clooney, right? And that's good because we need the pilot to give, you know, to speak to us in this confident, self-assured kind of tone. If the pilot spoke in a different voice, it might make us feel more uncomfortable. If the pilot was like, all right, so I'm your pilot and we're going to take off in a few minutes, all right? So don't worry about the safety announcement. You don't really need to listen to that. You know, if the pilot spoke like that, it might be a bit weird. Not that a Liverpool accent is inherently sort of untrustworthy or anything. No, it's just that somehow pilots
always seem to have this kind of voice. It's
almost like the BBC voice, isn't it? So thankfully, if pilots did sound different, it could be a bit worrying. So anyway, just copying the voice is quite amusing because it's something that we all hear. We've all been exposed to it. It's just a sort of an amusing observation. There's another line which he says, I think you're supposed to be honest with the dude in the tower. And for me, this is a very funny line because it's understating the formal protocol the pilots have to follow. And being honest with the dude in the tower is pretty much a fundamental responsibility of the pilot. Also, the choice of the word dude is funny because we're talking in informal terms about normally formal things. And this highlights the careless attitude of the pilot. The thought has just struck me here right now is that I'm attempting to explain a comedy routine, and it's just always a very bad idea. I think I've said on the podcast before that if you trying to explain a joke or trying to explain humour is a bit like dissecting a frog. You know, in a science class, it's like dissecting a frog because no one really learns anything and the frog dies. So by dissecting Louis C.K.'s comedy routine, I don't know if it's going to help you really to appreciate the humour. And in fact, in the process, the humour is just going to die anyway. But I'm on a mission to try and help people of the world who don't speak English as a first language to appreciate the wonderful... bits of stand-up comedy that are available to you. Okay, so let's carry on. So another line is, why is he telling us this shit? Do we have to corroborate his story? And that's true. Why was the pilot telling the passengers this absurd plan to lie to the tower and then at the last minute land in New York? So really, he's kind of painting the character of the pilot like some kind of shitty friend who expects you to lie for him. For me, there's something funny about this situation in that we never see the pilot. We just hear his announcements. So we kind of get an idea of his personality and that he's being a dick. And also the fact that there's a juxtaposition of what we normally expect pilots to be like, very responsible, very very serious and responsible and trustworthy, and this pilot who's just acting like an irresponsible dick, right? Also, the fact that everyone on the flight just accepts what's happening. And this is actually a very good observation because we do put our trust in people in authority positions very easily. We almost consider ourselves immortal when we're not responsible for our own safety. It's the same in taxis, okay? Whenever I get into a taxi, I never put the seatbelt on. When I'm driving or a passenger in a car, I'm always, you know, putting the seatbelt on. I'm very careful about that because it's very important to be safe. But for some reason, in the back of a taxi, never put the seatbelt on. Why is that? Are we somehow immortal when we get into the back of a taxi? I don't know. Louis C.K. is just a great storyteller. He brings the story alive with certain detailed descriptions to elicit fear, surprise, and so on. And he knows just how much detail should be given in the correct places. The humorous bits are delivered with excellent timing. They're not obvious jokes. He's really a master, and he makes it look easy. Okay, he makes the storytelling look like it's very casual, almost like it's just coming off the top of his head. But believe me, it's not easy. It's not easy to tell a story and make it amusing like that. So then also we have the irritated conversation between the pilot and the tower. The pilot is a total dick and the tower is getting annoyed with him, and you don't normally expect a pilot to behave like that. Then we've got the dramatic moment when Louis hears the pilot panicking, which he describes as interesting, which clearly understates exactly how alarming it must have felt to hear that. The tower also is so pissed off, and this is expressed with the line, "Well, clear to land then," which is delivered with so much frustrated despondency by Louis, as if the guy in the tower is like a tired parent who's run out of patience with his mischievous child. And this kind of frustration in a conversation is usually over something like homework or another petty disagreement. In this case, people's lives are involved. Louis' performance, I think, is great. He adds loads of attitude into the conversation between the pilot and the tower. Again, the pilot is just acting like a dick who has everyone's lives in his hands. Louis even gives a voice to the plane, which has a personality of its own, complaining that the pilot is pushing it too hard. Like, dude, I can't do that. Expressing how low to the ground they were. He mentions people in their cars who could actually see... He could actually see people in their cars mouthing the words, "What the fuck?" Which, again, must have been very scary and does highlight just how dramatic it was. So really, it's just a dramatic and engaging story, which seems to be true, told in a way that highlights the general irony of being at the mercy of a pilot making bad decisions. Also, by demonstrating that the pilot is emotional and out of breath after the landing, Louis allows us to imagine what we couldn't see in the cockpit of the plane. The pilot had a really hard time landing the plane and is seriously traumatized. And for some reason, in comedy, letting the audience imagine something for themselves is quite funny. It seems that creates laughter in the audience. Rather than keep showing it to them directly, letting them put two and two together and work it out is quite rewarding for a comedy audience. And also Louis's impression of the emotional pilot crying over the speaker system is just quite amusing. His choice of phrase, "You may call your loved ones," also emphasizes the emotional nature of the landing. Louis considers calling his ex-wife because he doesn't really have any other loved ones, but his ex-wife hates him, which clearly would be a pointless move. And this highlights Louis's sense of alienation, really, and the fact that no one really cares about him. Like, he nearly just died in a plane crash, but, you know, who cares? Louis really is like a classical comedy character. He's lonely, he's sad, he's alienated. So we also, we kind of get a little insight into just the sadness in his own world. And in comedy, there's always a bit of tragedy involved as well. We also get another character, that of the taxi driver, who we just learn, just watched the plane land, fully expecting everyone on board to die. So that's it. Again, explaining it does really no justice to the quality of Louis's work. Generally, I find that it helps if you care about the story you're listening to. If you're emotionally invested in it, it's much more engaging and therefore funnier. So if you believe that it's true, for example, it's likely to be funnier. I expect that's why Louis often says, "I swear this is true." And so on. Please listen to the routine again. Just rewind and listen to Louis doing it again. I'll post a video on the webpage from YouTube so you can listen to it again there. Please do listen to it again, because the more you listen to it, the more you'll get a sense of the details and so on. Please do try and care about it. You'll find it more enjoyable and rewarding if you do. Just in case you were in any doubt about the comic value of that routine, then let me just remind you that Louis C.K. is widely considered to be perhaps the funniest stand-up working on the scene at the moment. He's a celebrated comedian. Anyone who knows anything about comedy knows that he's great. So if you were doubting if he really is funny, well, I would say yes, he is. But of course, in the end, humour is subjective. But it may help you to find it funny if you realise that many other people do, okay? So is it that it's just not funny, or is it just that you're missing something? Let's move on to the next one, and this is Eddie Izzard, who is an English born... He's not born in England, he was born in the Middle East, but he's basically English. He has spent time living in other parts of the world. He's really an English stand-up comedian. I've talked about Eddie Izzard on the podcast before. Here is my basic version of Eddie's routine about eating biscuits on a plane. Again, I'm doing this so that you can understand the main point and then compare this description with Eddie's version. It may also allow you to notice the humorous aspects of Eddie's comedy routine. So in this bit, Eddie describes a flight that he took from Cork in the Republic of Ireland to Belfast in Northern Ireland. It's not a long flight, so the plane is very small. In fact, there were only about six people on board. So he walked across the runway to the tiny plane carrying his bags. Normally, you don't just walk across the runway with the bags in your hands. Normally, there's like some sort of system which allows you to walk, you know, from the airport terminal directly onto the plane. But because it was such a small plane, he walked across the runway holding his bags, and this made him feel like he was in the Beatles. The pilot was standing there waiting next to the plane, which reminded him of going on holiday with his dad when he was a kid. His dad would be there standing by the car waiting, trying to get everyone to hurry up. Come on, hurry up, get in the car. In the same way, the pilot was kind of standing there going, come on, hurry up, get in the plane. He describes a few things which felt odd about being on such a small plane. The pilot was right there sitting in front of him. And yet the pilot still did all the formal announcements, like on bigger flights. He talks about the fact that there was no co-pilot, but that the pilot had brought coffee and biscuits to share with everyone. He talks about the safety considerations of flying, including the idea of a bird strike, which is when birds can go through the jet engine of a plane, causing an accident. Although Eddie doesn't agree with the term bird strike, because the birds aren't really choosing to strike the engine, but rather they're actually being sucked into the engine against their will. The pilot on the tiny plane gave the full safety announcement, but people don't usually listen to the safety announcement. So perhaps the staff should make it sound like there's going to be an accident, just to make sure people do listen properly. Eddie makes fun of the life jacket that they have on planes and other safety procedures. Eddie describes the fact that the in-flight refreshments were just some coffee and biscuits shared by the pilot. He had a little basket with biscuits in it, and he notices that the pilot has a secret stash of chocolate biscuits and jammy dodgers. Jammy dodgers are basically biscuits with strawberry jam in the middle. So the pilot had a secret stash of chocolate biscuits and jammy dodgers, which he doesn't share with the other passengers. And he gets into a bit of an argument with the pilot over why he deserves to be given chocolate biscuits. This ends in the pilot crashing the plane into a mountain in order to win the argument. And in fact, Eddie dies at the end of this story. So let's now listen to Eddie Izzard and his description of biscuits on a plane. And this is taken from one of Eddie Izzard's comedy DVDs, which is called Glorious. You can download it from the iTunes store. Just go to the iTunes store and just type in Eddie Izzard Glorious. On teacherluke.co.uk, you'll find a link which you can just click, and it'll take you to the iTunes store, and you can download the DVD. Well, it's not a DVD now, it's just a video. You can download it. There's an audio version and a video version, and I strongly recommend that you do that, of course, because it's brilliant. It's one of the best stand-up videos that I've ever seen, and you really must give it a shot and give it a try. You might find it really enjoyable and fun. So now let's listen to Eddie Izzard talking about his experience of eating biscuits on a tiny little plane flying to Belfast.
And I was I had to do a flight last year on a tour, which was from Cork to Belfast. There were only six passengers. Someone turned up and said, well, we're not going to put you on the 747 because that would be laughable. So we've got a Volkswagen Beetle with wings for you. So I said, and we had our bags. You didn't give them to anyone. You just walked with them. Obviously, I didn't walk like this. That was comedy. I was walking like this. But that's a better mime position. And otherwise, you just think I'm walking. But that's with bags, you see. In case you ever need it, you know. In Nigeria and... Very big in mime. Anyway, so So yes, I was walking along with the bags and going through, you know, it's very small airports. You just go through a wooden door and someone goes, beep, oh, there's a problem there, I better check. And walking across the runway to get to the plane. Have you ever done that, walking with your bags across the runway to an aeroplane? You feel like the Beatles, you know? The squirrel's going, ah! We got there, the pilot was right by the plane, and he's going, and it was just like going on holiday with your dad. He's going, come on, come on! Come on, you don't need that, right? It's from a bag. Oh, bloody hell. Come on, get him, we're going to miss the clouds. Come on. So we get in, he was taxiing over to the runway. Come on, heads down, put your head down, I can't see. Come on. And he was right there. I was sitting right here. I could touch him on the shoulder. It was just like in the car with your dad. But even though he could turn around and talk to us, he's still doing, this is your pilot speaking. Welcome to flight one. From here to there, we're going to be flying at a height of 10 feet, going up to a height of 12 and a half feet if we see anything big. Your co-pilot today is a thermos of coffee. I thought there was a rule in flying that you have to have two pilots in case one goes, oh, for fuck's sake. And the other one goes, I'll take over. Dun-la-da-da, I've got one of my own. People in the back, I've got one. We had a thermos of coffee that was going to fly us home. And he's there and doing the stuff, and we're getting into flying, and they have a word in airport, the industry, the airways industry, they have a thing called bird strike. Bird strike is called. It's when a flock of birds just flying along, what a wonderful day, and the little sun's they go straight through a jet engine. And it's called bird strike, and it's a misnomer. It's not true, because the birds aren't striking, it's an engine suck. It's an engine making bird soup melange, you know? These birds aren't going, who's for bird strike, eh? Johnny Human's got these big metal buggers, they piss me off. I vote we go for bird strike. Alfie, Ginger, Stevie, Feathers, Stevens, Big Beak O'Reilly, Jimmy the Penguin, are you with me? Oh, you're a penguin, so you can stay here. Come on, let's do bird strike. Dun, 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 dun. Faster, faster. Dun, dun, dun. 747. And just before they go through, do they go, look, there's Rod Stewart in first class. We don't know. But they do the safety announcement there. My guy in my plane was going, the safety instructions, little announcement here. The safety exits are here, right next to me. If you see me go through this door, then please follow me quickly. If you've been in a big aeroplane recently, no one's listening. There's a problem, I believe, with no one's listening to the security announcements, you know, the safety things, because everyone's going, yeah, yeah, there. Lights flash, flash, pull the thing, pull it, and death. It's a kind of, yeah, all right, you know, and... But so the pilots have been told to sort of, you know, kick up the importance of these speeches, and they're going, no, please do listen to the safety. I mean, please do, because we've changed things around now. Yeah, you don't know what we're doing. We're putting the life jacket on back to front now, and some of the safety exits, some of them are false. No, they're not true at all. Yeah, and listen very carefully, because I've got a bad feeling about this flight. I don't think we're going to make it. After that announcement, everyone's going, show me everything, right. Private showing, show me again, that's good. No, I'm putting it on now, fuck it, I'm putting it on now. Yes, I'll have a cup of coffee, thanks. And they have these life jackets, and you pull it, and you've got a little pipe here for top up. And I don't know about you, but I don't want top up. I want stays up. Top up implies hole in, implies having a... I want fucking stays up, no hole in the first place, thank you very much. Bloody top up. No, it's all a bit sort of tea and crumpets with a vicar, top up, yeah. You crashed in the Atlantic, bobbing around. Oh, you survived as well done. Care for a top up? couldn't top me up, could you? No, I didn't need it. I'm just trying to break the ice. Hey, float over here, float over here, float over here. Look, two pipes, pan pipes. It's 2,000 miles to Europe, 1,000 miles to America. You've got your whistle. A little light going beep, beep. And after a while, a pilot fish comes up. Hey, hey, that's my gag. Oh, weird people. And there's Noah shooting around a speedboat. Nah. If anyone's got big ears, you can get in and sit on the side. That's photos to the Bible. So I was in my aeroplane, in my small aeroplane, and the guy's there, and we have drinks and light refreshments when we get above the clouds, and his coffee comes back from a thermos. He goes, oh, cheers, Tom, mate, and it goes back. And then he had this wicker basket with biscuits in. They're all kind of digestive, you know, not terribly interesting. So I take the best ones, and it goes back to the guy at the back. Oh, these are crap. You know when you're not hungry, but then you get offered a biscuit, you want better than that, you know. I didn't want anything, but what have you got? So I'm nibbling my biscuits and drinking my coffee, and I notice at the corner of my eye, the pilot reaches under his jacket, pulls out chocolate biscuits. And in a flash, I realise he's hidden them there and taken them out of the wicker basket and hidden them underneath. And because I knew that, because that's what I would have done. You know, when you've got friends around, do you want some biscuits? I'm just going to get some biscuits. And you're up in the kitchen, you go, I'll just have one. Someone comes up, do you want a hand? Oh, no. Just letting this mouse run over my hands here. So the pilot's there eating chocolate biscuits. And I'm there going, hey, chocolate biscuits, hey, digestive crap biscuits, hey. He's going, get off. Bloody pilot, you know, stress, chocolate biscuits. No, what the hell? I'm going, no, customer's always right. You know, digestive crap biscuits. Go, fuck off. 5 years training for this, hard time, chocolate biscuits, perks of the trade. Just go, I don't agree. I'm going, hey, fucking. Hold on. What were you saying about chocolate biscuits? No, fine, have the chocolate biscuit. I don't care. And chocolate biscuits. 20 minutes later, reaches out and pulls out Jammy Dodgers. Jammy Dodgers. Nah. And we hit a mountain. And I died. So that was the end of that plane flight. And that is also the end of the show. So thank you very much for being here. Good night.
That was Eddie Izzard from 1997 from his stand-up show called Glorious. And so what's funny about this? Well, really, for me, it's all about Eddie and his idiosyncratic style. It's a cute story with some observational comedy around the subject of flying, but really it's Eddie's unique postmodern approach. Which makes it special for me. I mean, it's the way he talks is amusing to me. He sort of bends reality. It's surreal. He deconstructs the whole performance. He does mime jokes, like physical jokes, which are he kind of makes fun of the whole concept of physical humor and stuff. He's generally quite self-conscious and self-aware. And, you know, I think that with Eddie, either you get it or you don't get it. And not really any amount of explaining will change your mind. He's a bit like Marmite. Marmite is a kind of like a vegetable food spread, stuff that you can spread on toast. It's stuff that we have in the UK. And either you love it or you hate it. There's nowhere in between. It divides people. So if you say that something is like Marmite, it means that either you love it or you hate it. I think with Eddie Izzard, you either get it or you don't get it. But nevertheless, let me go through some specific things from the routine. So he describes the plane by saying that it's a Volkswagen Beetle with wings, which is just an image to describe the fact that the plane is so crappy and small. He does a mime joke about the way he walks holding his bags. This is just a joke about how miming an action has to be quite specific because different mimes suggest different things. You really have to watch the video, which you can find on the webpage, to understand that. A mime, do you know what a mime is? It's basically when you have to try and act something out without words. So you just use physical movements as a way of communicating something, to mime something. Mime is a verb. It's also a noun, okay? To do a mime or to mime something. The moment where, because of the fact that it's such a small airport, you go through a wooden door and someone goes, beep! So the security is so basic that it's just literally a person standing there saying, beep. It's not even a security system. It's just a guy who goes, beep, like that. He does a comparison between the pilot and his dad when he was a kid, which highlights how small and cozy the flight was, while also having a sort of nostalgic comedy value. Sometimes comedians will get laughs from the audience just by inciting the audience to remember something from the past. And that's a very common thing in stand-up comedy. The comic will just remind the audience of certain things, from old things from the past, like, for example, old mobile phones described in detail, or in this case, those memories of going on holiday with your parents when you were a kid. And comedians often do this. They describe shared past memories in detail, and the audience gets a bit of a pleasant nostalgia from it, okay? The other thing is just making observations with a specific attitude. And this is really the basis of a whole form of stand-up comedy. That's observational humour. Lots and lots of comics do this. They just observe or notice specific details about commonly experienced things and then express them with an attitude. The attitude is usually sort of questioning the strangeness or bizarreness of the small details that we all experience. Jerry Seinfeld is really the master of this, as we will see in a bit, but Eddie Izzard does it a lot too, and in this routine he does quite a lot of it, talking about the safety routines on planes, the life jackets, and some of the ridiculous aspects, like the idea that you have a little a way to top up your life jacket, you know, that thing you blow into. I like Eddie's joke, which is that, you know, with a life jacket, I don't want top up, I want stays up, which is actually a quite funny joke. I think we can all relate to this, just the understanding of, you know, certain weird things about the life jackets and all that stuff. Also, there's just the juxtaposition of these familiar things that we experience in large planes in such a small plane. He also questions the logic behind the term bird strike, renaming it engine suck, which really, when you think about it, is maybe a better word, because the birds aren't choosing to strike the plane, the engine is just sucking them into it. And then he voices the thoughts of the birds, who apparently team up in order to take down aeroplanes. And for some reason, they're all portrayed like brave young World War II era British pilots, like in the Battle of Britain. Then there's the whole scene with the pilot and his secret supply of biscuits. I don't really know why this is funny, to be honest. I can't really explain it. I just enjoy Eddie's account of arguing with the pilot and the reasons why they should or shouldn't be allowed to share the chocolate biscuits. Then there's the cheeky ending in which Eddie dies in his own story, which is a sort of playful deconstruction of those first-person story archetypes. Of course, it's impossible for him to have died at the end of the story, and yet, he, you know, according to him, he does die at the end, which is just a bit ridiculous. In the video, I love the cheeky look on Eddie's face at this point when he says that he died at the end of the story. I just love Eddie Izzard. I think that's probably obvious. Did I mention, by the way, that I met him and had dinner with him earlier this year? I don't know if I mentioned that before on the podcast. I think I did. Anyway, just saying. Right, let's move on to listen to Jerry Seinfeld talk about airplane flights, okay? Now, this is a very famous comedy routine by one of the most well-known comedians in the world, certainly in the English-speaking world. But I shouldn't really build it up too much, because it could just end up being an anticlimax. So don't expect too much, really. Just try and follow what he's saying. Basically, Jerry talks about various aspects of airports and flying, focusing on some of the more ridiculous or pointless aspects of that experience. It's observational comedy. And here are the observations. For me, it's all about Jerry's delivery, his efficient use of words, the fact that he's chosen very carefully exactly how he's going to explain these ideas, his choice of words, the timing, all of it combines to create what for me is a very effective piece of observational stand-up comedy. Here are the things that Jerry says, sort of summarized, okay? So Jerry sarcastically points out that the people who work in airport security are actually quite incompetent and unmotivated and probably not very intelligent. And he wonders why the staff are so bored and so lazy. And he uses sarcasm to express that idea. He describes the fact that the woman you typically see at security is often quite fat and her trousers are stretched almost to breaking point. And this would be quite cruel, making fun of fat people, if it wasn't so well worded. Also, bear in mind, this is the USA where, you know, that's quite common, I suppose. Jerry has a reputation for being quite a clean comedian. He doesn't use swear words and things. But if you look more closely, he's actually quite aggressively antisocial in some cases. He seems to hold the whole world in contempt. Certainly these annoying little details. And his way of expressing this contempt he has for the irritating little details in life is hugely enjoyable. Because let's face it, we hate queuing up at the airport and having to listen to the safety announcement. He's really just voicing the thoughts that we all have in our heads in those situations. You know, like, what's with these people? I mean, really? He suggests that the X-ray machine is useless because it's impossible to identify any objects, and that the guy looking at the screen is unable to identify any bombs or weapons or anything. He wonders why the taps, or as he describes them, faucets in American English, the taps in airports, have those special on-off buttons. You know, you press the button down and you get a limited amount of water and you have to press the button again. Why don't they have those normal taps? Don't they trust us to use normal taps in airports? He also wonders why sandwiches are so expensive in airports. Why is it that everything is, the prices of everything is just are so high in airports? He wonders why the pilot tells us everything he's going to do before he does it, and in such a self-satisfied voice. We don't really need to know all of the things the pilot's going to do, the altitudes and all that stuff. All we really care about is that we get to our destination. He also observes that the safety announcement is rather patronising, as if we really need to be told how to open that old-fashioned belt buckle. Of course, he doesn't mention this. He doesn't mention that this is explained to us for legal reasons. Instead, he just focuses on the fact that it's just odd and annoying the way that we're all patronised so much in these situations. He notices that the stewardesses are very vague when they're pointing out the emergency exits during the safety announcement. Have you seen that on air flights when they the stewardesses point to the emergency exits? They do it in a very sort of vague hand movement. It also looks like some kind of musical number in like a Broadway musical, doesn't it, with dance routines and so on. He mentions that everything on the plane is tiny, even the language that they use to diminish problems during the flight. It's all about small things, tiny things. We're going to have a tiny problem, we're going to have a slight delay, things like that. He points out the idiosyncrasies of using the aeroplane toilet, particularly the presence of a hole for razor disposal. I mean, who is actually shaving on these flights? So that's a summary of the things that you're going to hear. And now let's listen to Jerry Seinfeld talking about flying.
But I love to travel. I love it, whether it's a car or it's a plane. I like to get out there. I like to keep it moving. I love airports. Feel safe in airports, thanks to the high-caliber individuals we have working at X-ray Security. How about this crack squad of savvy, motivated personnel? The way you want to set up your airport security is you want the short, heavy-set woman at the front with the skin-tight uniform. That's your first line of defense. You want those pants so tight the flap in front of the zipper has pulled itself open. You can see the metal tangs hanging on for dear life. Then you put the bag on the conveyor belt, goes to the little luggage car wash. Then you have that other genius down at the other end looking in the little X-ray TV screen. This Einstein has chosen to stand in front of X-rays 14 hours a day as his profession. Looking in that thing. I have looked in that TV screen. I cannot make out one object. He's standing there. What is that, a hairdryer with a scope on it? That looks okay. Keep it moving. Some sort of bowling ball candle. Yeah, I got no problem with that. Just, you know, we don't want to hold up the line. So I go to the bathroom in the airport. What is the story on the sinks in airport bathrooms, that they will not give us a twisted-on, twisted-off human-style faucet? Is that too risky for the general population? Too dangerous? We better install the one-handed, spring-loaded, pain-in-the-ass Alcatraz-style faucets. You know those ones where you gotta go, hey, boy, I got a little water there. Oh, another couple drops. What is it that they think we would do with a faucet? Turn them all on full, run out into the parking lot, laughing, pushing each other into the bushes. Come on, the water's on, let's go. I turned it on full blast. You idiot, we're businessmen. We're going to miss our plane. Who cares? Water. That's how they think we'll behave. Do the people that work in these little shops in the airport have any idea what the prices are every place else in the world? Yeah, $14 tuna sandwich. We think that's fair. That's what we charge in our country. Man, you get on the plane. Pilot, of course, always has to come on the PA system. This guy's so excited about being a pilot, he can't even stand himself. Well, I'm going to take it up to about $20,000. And I'm going to make a left by Pittsburgh. Then I'm going to make a right by Chicago. Then I'm going to bring it down to 15,000. He's giving you the whole route, all his moves. We're in the back going, yeah, fine, that's all. You know, just do whatever the hell you got to do. I don't know. Just end up where it says on the ticket, really, is our only concern. Do I bother him with what I'm doing, knocking on the cockpit door? I'm having the peanuts now. Yeah, that's what we're doing back here. Thought I'd keep you posted. I'm not going to have them all now. I'm just going to have a few. I don't want to finish it because it's such a big bag. Then the stewardesses have to come out. They have to do their little emergency equipment show. You know that thing they do. One of them reads it. The other one acts it out. Hey, we have seat belts and oxygen masks. Things for you to use. They show you how to use a seat belt in case you haven't been in a car since 1965. Oh, you lift up on the buckle. Oh. I was trying to break the metal apart. I thought that's how it works. I was going to try and tear the fabric part of the belt. I thought if I could just get it started. Then they always point out the emergency exits. It's always with that very vague point, though, isn't it? Where the hell would these places be, would you say? Plane's at a 90-degree angle, your hair is on fire, you're looking for this. How do you think you're going to do there? She's thinking, I'm getting out before you're getting out. You're dead, I'm gone. Then they always have to close that first class curtain, too. And they always give you that little look. Maybe if you had worked a little harder, I wouldn't have to do this. It's the whole tiny world on the airplane, isn't it? There's always that little tiny table there, a tiny computer, everyone's in a little cramped seat, tiny food, tiny utensils, tiny liquor bottles, tiny bathroom, tiny sink, tiny mirror, tiny faucet. So it's a small problem, going to be a slight delay, we're going to be a little late. I always go in the airplane bathroom. Even if I don't have to go, I got to go in there. It's nice. It's like your own little apartment on the plane, isn't it? Go in there, lock the door, the light comes on after a second. It's like a little surprise party. But I'm always impressed with the amount of equipment that they have in that place. I mean, it's little, but they got the tissues, towels, closets, compartments, tiny slot for used razor blades. They always have that. Who is shaving on the plane? And shaving so much, they're using up razor blades? Is this what's happening? What, is the wolf man flying in there, for Christ's sakes? Who could shave that much?
Okay, so that was Jerry Seinfeld talking about his experiences and his observations about air flight. What's funny about this? Well, you know what? I don't have time. I don't have time to go into all the reasons why I think this is funny. But you can read the notes that I've prepared if you go to teacherluke.co.uk. And if you want to kind of read a bit of commentary, go to the website. You'll find the notes that I don't have time to read through. Instead, what I want to do is just move on. Before I do that, though, I must remind you, do check out Jerry Seinfeld's show, which is called I'm Telling You for the Last Time. You can get it on DVD. You can download it. You can get an audio CD version of it. Buy the whole show. It's brilliant. Okay. Right. Now let me play you the last thing, the final thing. And this is a real story, true story. It's not a stand-up comedy routine, although there are a couple of little laughs in it. But it's just a very short clip, about 3 minutes, by a guy called Rick Elias. And three things he learned when his plane crashed. This is not stand-up routine, but it's just an awesome story. And we love engaging true stories on Luke's English Podcast, don't we? I thought it would be a good way to end this episode of the podcast. So this is an account of someone who was on board US Airways Flight 1549, which had to crash land in the Hudson River after a bird strike during takeoff from LaGuardia Airport in 2009. The pilot in this case was a real hero because he managed to land the plane very calmly in the Hudson River with no loss of life. So imagine being on this plane where the engines cut out and you realise that you're going to have to crash land in a river. What are the thoughts that would go through your head? So here the storyteller reflects on what it's really like to face your own death and what he learned from that. It's worth remembering that we shouldn't take anything for granted. This is from a TED talk called Three Things I Learned When My Plane Crashed, and this is the story which is going to play out at the end of this episode of the podcast. Let's listen to it now.
Imagine a big explosion as you climb through 3,000 feet. Imagine a plane full of smoke. Imagine an engine going clack, 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 clack. Sounds scary. Well, I had a unique seat that day. I was sitting in 1D. I was the only one who could talk to the flight attendants. So I looked at them right away, and they said, no problem, we probably hit some birds. The pilot had already turned the plane around, and we weren't that far. You could see Manhattan. 2 minutes later, three things happened at the same time. The pilot lines up the plane with the Hudson River. It's usually not the route. He turns off the engines. Now imagine being on a plane with no sound. And then he says three words, as unemotional three words as I've ever heard. He says, brace for impact. I didn't have to talk to the flight attendant anymore. I could see in her eyes, it was terror. Life was over. Now I want to share with you three things I learned about myself that day. I learned that it all changes in an instant. We have this bucket list, we have these things we want to do in life, and I thought about all the people I wanted to reach out that I didn't. all the fences I wanted to mend, all the experiences I wanted to have and I never did. As I thought about that, later on, I came up with a saying, which is, I collect bad wines. Because if the wine is ready and the person is there, I'm opening it. I no longer want to postpone anything in life. And that urgency, that purpose, has really changed my life. The second thing I learned that day, and this is as we clear the George Washington Bridge, which was by not a lot, I thought about, wow, I really feel one real regret. I've lived a good life. In my own humanity and mistakes, I've tried to get better at everything I've tried. But in my humanity, I also allow my ego to get in. And I regretted the time I wasted in things that did not matter with people that matter. And I thought about my relationship with my wife, with my friends, with people. And after, as I reflected on that, I decided to eliminate negative energy from my life. It's not perfect. It's a lot better. I've not had a fight with my wife in 2 years. It feels great. I'm no longer trying to be right. I choose to be happy. The third thing I learned, and this is as your mental clock starts going 15, 14, 13, you can see the water coming. I'm saying, please blow up. Right? I don't want this thing to break in 20 pieces like you've seen in those documentaries. And as we're coming down, I had a sense of, wow, dying is not scary. It's almost like we've been preparing for it our whole lives. But it was very sad. I didn't want to go. I love my life. And that sadness really framed in one thought, which is, I only wish for one thing. I only wish I could see my kids grow up. About a month later, I was in a performance by my daughter, first grader, not much artistic talent yet. And I'm bawling. I'm crying like a little kid. And it made all the sense in the world to me. I realized at that point, by connecting those two dots, that the only thing that matters in my life is being a great dad. Above all, the only goal I have in life is to be a good dad. I was given the gift of a miracle, of not dying that day. I was given another gift, which was to be able to see into the future and come back and live differently. I challenge you guys that are flying today. Imagine the same thing happens on your plane, and please don't. But imagine, and how would you change? What would you get done that you're waiting to get done because you think you'll be here forever? How would you change your relationships and the negative energy in them? And more than anything, are you being the best parent you can? Thank you.
Food for thought there for everyone, I think. Very interesting to just make you think you mustn't take anything for granted. Thanks for listening to this episode of Luke's English Podcast, by the way. Don't forget that if you do visit teacherluke.co.uk, you can read transcripts of all of the clips that I've played for you today, as well as many of the things that I said too. A lot of it is transcribed, okay? So do visit the website. You can actually read and learn and keep pushing your English to the next level. That's the end of this episode, and I'll speak to you all very, very soon. If you are concerned about flying, after listening to all these scary stories, let me just remind you that flying is actually far, far safer than many of the other things that we do in our daily lives. Driving, walking down the street, these are actually more dangerous than flying statistically. So don't worry, you can sleep fine, and you've got nothing to worry about on your next journey. But do keep in mind some of the things you've heard. Leave your comments on the website, and I'll speak to you again soon. For now, though, it's goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.